Unit 10, A Changing Society, 1968 to present. Why it matters. A reassessment of post-war developments marked the last three decades of the 20th century. The Cold War ended and political boundaries were redrawn. The United States remained a global force, but the role of the federal government was diminished in the wake of scandal and a renewed conservatism. As the United States entered a new century, the nation continued to redefine itself. The country's social diversity posed new challenges and provided new strength to the nation. Understanding the shifts of this period will help prepare you for your future. Chapter 32, Politics and Economics, 1971 to 1980. Why it matters. The protests of the 1960s were passionate and sometimes violent. The nation elected President Nixon on a promise to uphold the values of what Nixon called Middle America. In foreign policy, Nixon charted a new path with a historic visit to China. At home, he introduced new federalism. In 1974, the Watergate scandal forced Nixon to resign. Presidents Ford and Carter faced an economic downturn and a major energy crisis. The impact today. Experiences of the 1970s have had an impact today. The Watergate scandal has left many Americans less confident in political leaders. The Department of Energy, created by President Carter, still exists as a cabinet-level agency. Section 1, The Nixon Administration. An American Story. Millions of Americans saw police and demonstrators clash on the streets of Chicago at the Democratic National Convention in late August 1968. Many television viewers were outraged at the police tactics they saw. G.L. Halbert, however, was not one of them. To make his support of police efforts public, Halbert wrote a letter to Newsweek magazine. Congratulations to Mayor Daley and the Chicago police on their tough handling of the yippies, Vietniks, and newsmen. If more mayors and police departments had the courage to crack down on those who carry only the flags of our enemies and newsmen who consistently slant their coverage of events in favor of those who would undermine and disrupt our country, there would be greater freedom for the majority of Americans rather than greater lawlessness for the few. It is a tragedy that such individuals are allowed to cringe behind our constitutional guarantees after they have wreaked destruction by their agitation. Quoted in Newsweek, September 16, 1968. Appealing to Middle America. The views expressed by G.L. Halbert were not unusual. While they did not shout as loudly as the protesters, many Americans supported the government and longed for an end to the violence and turmoil that seemed to plague the nation in the 1960s. The presidential candidate in 1968 who appealed to many of these frustrated citizens was Richard Nixon, a Republican. Nixon aimed many of his campaign message at these Americans, whom he referred to as Middle America and the Silent Majority. He promised them peace with honor in Vietnam, law and order, a streamlined government, and a return to more traditional values at home. The election of 1968. Nixon's principal opponent in the 1968 presidential election was Democrat Hubert Humphrey, who had served as vice president under Lyndon Johnson. Nixon also had to wage his campaign against a strong third-party candidate, George Wallace, an experienced Southern politician and avowed supporter of segregation. In a 1964 bid for the Democratic presidential nomination, the former Alabama governor had attracted considerable support. On Election Day, Wallace captured an impressive 13.5% of the popular vote, the best showing of a third-party candidate since 1924. Nixon managed a victory, however, receiving 43.4% of the popular vote to Humphrey's 42.7% and 301 electoral votes to Humphrey's 191. The Southern Strategy. One of the keys to Nixon's victory was a surprisingly strong showing in the South. Even though the South had long been a Democratic stronghold, Nixon had refused to concede the region. To gain Southern support, Nixon had met with powerful South Carolina Senator Strom Thurmond and won his backing by promising several things: to appoint only conservatives to the federal courts, to name a Southerner to the Supreme Court, to oppose court-ordered busing, and to choose a vice presidential candidate acceptable to the South. Nixon ultimately chose Spiro Agnew, governor of the border state of Maryland. Nixon's efforts paid off on Election Day. Large numbers of white Southerners deserted the Democratic Party, granting Humphrey only one victory in that region, in Lyndon Johnson's home state of Texas. While Wallace claimed most of the states in the Deep South, Nixon captured Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, and North Carolina. Senator Strom Thurmond's support delivered his state of South Carolina for the Republicans as well. Following his victory, Nixon set out to attract even more Southerners to the Republican Party, an effort that became known as the Southern Strategy. Toward this end, the president fulfilled his agreements with Thurmond and took steps to slow desegregation. During his tenure, Nixon worked to overturn several civil rights policies. He reversed a Johnson administration policy, for example, that had cut off federal funds for racially segregated schools. A law and order president. Having also won the presidency with a promise of law and order, Nixon immediately set out to battle crime in America. His administration specifically targeted the nation's anti-war protesters. Attorney General John Mitchell declared that he stood ready to prosecute hardline militants who crossed state lines to stir up riots. Mitchell's deputy, Richard Kleindienst, even went further with the boast, "We're going to enforce the law against draft evaders, against radical students, against deserters, against civil disorders, against organized crime, and against street crime." Nixon also went on the attack against the recent Supreme Court rulings that expanded the rights of accused criminals. Nixon openly criticized the court and its Chief Justice, Earl Warren. The president promised to fill vacancies on the Supreme Court with judges who would support the rights of law enforcement over the rights of suspected criminals. When Chief Justice Warren retired shortly after Nixon took office, the president replaced him with Warren Burger, a respected conservative judge. He also placed three other conservative justices on the court, including one from the South. The Burger Court did not reverse Warren Court rulings on the rights of criminal suspects. It did, however, refuse to expand those rights further. For example, in Stone v. Powell, 1976, it agreed to limits on the rights of defendants to appeal state convictions to the federal judiciary. The court also continued to uphold capital punishment as constitutional. The New Federalism. President Nixon's Republican constituency also favored dismantling a number of federal programs and giving more control to state and local governments. Nixon called this New Federalism. He argued that it would provide the government agencies that were closest to the citizens the opportunity to address more of their issues. "I reject the patronizing idea that government in Washington, D.C. is inevitably more wise and more efficient than government at the state or local level," Nixon declared. "The idea that a bureaucratic elite in Washington knows what's best for people is really a contention that people cannot govern themselves." Under the New Federalism program, Congress passed a series of revenue-sharing bills that granted federal funds to state and local agencies to use as they saw fit. Although revenue sharing was intended to give state and local agencies more power, over time it gave the federal government new power. As states came to depend on federal funds, the federal government could impose conditions on the states. Unless they met those conditions, their funds would be cut off. While he worked to limit federal government responsibilities, Nixon also sought to increase the power of the executive branch. Nixon did not build many strong relationships in Congress. His lack of camaraderie with lawmakers and the fact that the Republican Party controlled neither house led to struggles with the legislative branch. Nixon often responded by trying to work around Congress and use greater executive authority. For instance, when Congress appropriated money for programs he opposed, Nixon impounded or refused to release the funds. The Supreme Court eventually declared the practice of impoundment unconstitutional. The Family Assistance Plan. One federal program Nixon sought to reform was the nation's welfare system, Aid to Families with Dependent Children, or AFDC. The program had many critics, Republican and Democratic alike. They argued that AFDC was structured so that it was actually better for poor people to apply for benefits than to take a low-paying job. A mother who had such a job, for example, would then have to pay for child care, sometimes leaving her with less income than she had on welfare. There was also great inequity among states, since each was allowed to develop its own guidelines. In 1969, Nixon proposed replacing the AFDC with the Family Assistance Plan. The plan called for providing needing families a guaranteed yearly grant of $1,600, which could be supplemented by outside earnings. Many liberals applauded the plan as a significant step toward expanding federal responsibility for the poor. Nixon, however, presented the program in a conservative light, arguing it would reduce federal supervision and encourage welfare recipients to become more responsible. Although the program won approval in the House in 1970, it soon came under harsh attack. Welfare recipients complained that the federal grant was too low, while conservatives who disapproved of guaranteed income also criticized the plan. Such opposition led to the program's defeat in the Senate. Reading check. Evaluating. What impact did third-party candidate George Wallace have on the 1968 election? Nixon's foreign policy. Despite Nixon's domestic initiatives, a State Department official later recalled that the president had a monumental disinterest in domestic policies. Nixon once expressed his hope that a competent cabinet of advisors could run the country. This would allow him to focus his energies on the subject that truly fascinated him, foreign affairs. Embarking on an ambitious foreign policy agenda that included historic encounters with both China and the Soviet Union, Nixon set out to leave his mark on the world stage. Nixon and Kissinger. In a move that would greatly influence his foreign policy, Nixon chose as his national security advisor Henry Kissinger, a former Harvard professor. As a teenager, Kissinger had fled to the United States from Germany with his family in 1938 to escape Nazi persecution of Jews. He had served as a foreign policy consultant for Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. Though Secretary of State William Rogers technically outranked him, Kissinger soon took the lead in helping shape Nixon's foreign policy. Nixon and Kissinger shared views on many issues. Both believed simply abandoning the war in Vietnam would damage the United States' position in the world. Thus, they worked toward a gradual withdrawal. Nixon and Kissinger also believed in shaping a foreign policy rooted in practical approaches rather than ideologies. They felt the nation's decades-long anti-communist crusade had created a foreign policy that was too rigid and often worked against the nation's interests. While both leaders wanted to continue to contain communism, they believed that engagement and negotiation with communists offered a better way for the United States to achieve its international goals. As a surprised nation watched, Nixon and Kissinger put their philosophy into practice by forging friendlier relations with the Soviet Union and China. The establishment of détente. The Soviet Union was not initially pleased when Nixon, a man with a history of outspoken anti-communist actions, became president. The Washington correspondent for the Soviet newspaper Izvestia, Yuri Bersikov, had called the election unwelcome news for Moscow and predicted that Soviet leaders would have to deal with a very stubborn president. Things did not turn out that way, however. Nixon was still a staunch anti-communist, but he came to reject the notion of a bipolar world in which the superpowers of the United States and the Soviet Union confronted one another. He believed the United States needed to understand the growing role that China, Japan, and Western Europe would soon play. This multipolar world of future demanded a different approach to American foreign policy. With Kissinger's help, Nixon fashioned an approach called détente, or relaxation of tensions, between the United States and its two major communist rivals, the Soviet Union and China. In explaining détente to the American people, Nixon said that the United States had to build a better relationship with its main rivals in the interests of world peace. We must understand that détente is not a love fest. It is an understanding between nations that have opposite purposes, but which share common interests, including the avoidance of nuclear war. Such an understanding can work, that is, restrain aggression and deter war, only as long as the potential aggressor is made to recognize that neither aggression nor war will be profitable. Quoted in The Limits of Power. Nixon visits China. Détente began with an effort to improve American-Chinese relations. Since 1949, when a communist government came to power in China, the United States had refused to recognize the communists as the legitimate rulers. Instead, the American government recognized the exiled regime on the island of Taiwan as the Chinese government. Having long supported this policy, Nixon now set out to reverse it. He began by lifting trade and travel restrictions and withdrawing the 7th Fleet from defending Taiwan. After a series of highly secret negotiations between Kissinger and Chinese leaders, Nixon announced that he would visit China in February 1972. During the historic trip, the leaders of both nations agreed to establish more normal relations between their countries. In a statement that epitomized the notion of détente, Nixon told his Chinese host during a banquet toast, "Let us start a long march together, not in lockstep, but on different roads leading to the same goal, the goal of building a world structure of peace and justice." In taking this trip, Nixon hoped not only to strengthen ties with the Chinese, but also to encourage the Soviets to more actively pursue diplomacy. Since the 1960s, a rift had developed between the communist governments of the Soviet Union and China. Troops of the two nations occasionally clashed along their borders. Nixon believed détente with China would encourage Soviet Premier Leonid Brezhnev to be more accommodating with the United States. U.S.-Soviet tensions ease. Nixon's feelings about the Soviets proved correct. Shortly after the public learned of U.S. negotiations with China, the Soviets proposed an American-Soviet summit, or high-level diplomatic meeting, to be held in May 1972. On May 22nd, President Nixon flew to Moscow for a week-long summit. Thus, he became the first American president ever to visit the Soviet Union. Before Nixon's visit, Secretary of Commerce Maurice Stan spent 11 days in the Soviet Union. In his visits to a tractor plant, a steel mill, and an oil field, Stan recalled, "It was as friendly a meeting as if I were representing California and negotiating with the state of Arizona." Before leaving, however, Stan requested a favor from his Soviet host, Alexei Kosygin. "There is one thing I hope you will take care of. On the highway into Moscow, there was a great big billboard with the United States pictured as a vicious killer, with a sword in one hand and a gun in the other, killing people all over the world. I don't think that will be a good entrance for President Nixon, and the sign ought to come down." He said it will. Quoted in Nixon, An Oral History of His Presidency. During the historic Moscow summit, the two superpowers signed the first Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, or SALT I, a plan to limit nuclear arms the two nations had been working on for years. Nixon and Brezhnev also agreed to increase trade and the exchange of scientific information. Détente profoundly eased tensions between the Soviet Union and the United States. By the end of Nixon's presidency, one Soviet official admitted the United States and the Soviet Union had their best relationship of the whole Cold War period. President Nixon indeed had made his mark on the world stage. As he basked in the glow of his 1972 foreign policy triumphs, however, trouble was brewing on the home front. A scandal was about to engulf his presidency and plunge the nation into one of its greatest constitutional crises. Reading check. Summarizing. What were the results of the 1972 American-Soviet summit?